Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Buckets, Boards, and Blocks is ready to tip. And today's guest needs no introduction. She is Lady Magic herself, Nancy Lieberman, and I am fangirling, tripping. I'm so excited to have her. If you loved the late, great Muhammad Ali, the icon that he was, you will be fascinated by the story of Nancy and Muhammad's friendship. But first, Darlene, girl, let's run it.
Buckets, Boards, and Blocks is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks is hosted by a former Georgetown Hoyer who likes nothing better than a well-executed fade screen and thinks DC ballers are the smartest. A lover of threes in transition, Monica McNutt.
Darlene and friends, welcome to the show. In a few minutes, we've got a classic hour of great stories from the legendary Nancy Lieberman. She's a living legend and a true inspiration. She's just so great. I can't wait for you guys to hear this conversation. But first, we've got some business to attend to, namely the very exciting WNBA playoffs. Bruce, my guy, my sidekick, let's break it down.
All right, Monica. So last night, game four of the Mystics and the Aces. What were your thoughts?
Okay, so let's rewind back to game three and the post-game interview with my friend that covers Big East hoops for FS1, Kim Adams, where Liz Cambage what's the adjective that I want, Bruce? Matter-of-factly, we'll call it. Talked a little trash in her post-game interview, telling the Mystics that if they can't handle it, then maybe they should get in the weight room. Oh boy, 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 boy. The Mystics absolutely responded. And so last night, I actually thought that the Aces were poised to pull out a W watching the first quarter of action. But I think by about the third quarter, to me, it just looked like Kristi Toliver was back in her bag, the original way that she was prior to going out with that knee injury. Once Emma Mieseman was able to catch and shoot as opposed to having to try to attempt to create a shot, Emma is literally a walking bucket. Like, she does not miss. And so I was like, oh, the Aces might be a little bit outmatched on this one. You just saw the veterans of the Mystics sort of take over, and then you realize that they just were not going to be denied, having been swept last year in the finals.
You know, Liz definitely showed up. I mean, she left it all out there. She had 25 and 12. De'Arica Hamby had a really nice game, 18, 11, and 7. But I think the person who really kind of let the Aces down a little bit was Asia Wilson. I mean, she only took four shots. She only made one. And, you know, she's a great player and everyone respects her, but only four field goal attempts in a closeout game?
You know, that's it's giving me shades of some of the conversation that we had in the other semifinal matchup with Candace Parker, the Sparks, and the Connecticut Sun, and Candace only playing 11 minutes in what was turned out to be their elimination game. I don't think it's quite the same, but you do have that moment where you wonder who's going to show up big. I don't think Asia and Liz both being on at the same time is still a little bit puzzling for that group.
I really felt like, you know, when you talked about, you know, showing up, I mean, Kristi Toliver, I mean, what a floor game she had. I mean, she had 20, she had 9 dimes, she only had 2 turnovers. And it's so funny. You know how numbers can be deceiving. If you looked at the box score for that game, right, Vegas was plus 10 on rebounds. They were plus 4 in free throws made, minus 5 in turnovers. You know, those numbers were sort of like, you know, the turnovers really, I guess, is the number that kind of killed them, right? Losing by, you know, just a couple of buckets.
Definitely the turnovers. And I think when you look at three-point shooting, that was a margin that the Mystics capitalized on. Emma Mieseman at one point, I think she hit back-to-back threes. I think she hit like four shots in a row, but two of them were threes over the course of that. But I also think if you look back at the regular season, the Mystics manhandled the Aces. I mean, they manhandled most of the teams in the league. In fact, last night they showed that they had zero games won by margins of 5 points, but they had won 19 games by at least 10 or more. But I think you got to see Elena Deladon, Christy Tolliver, Emma Mieseman, even Natasha Cloud hit some big time shots for the Mystics, lock in into that next level of competition. Anytime I'm talking to a team on any level, college, pro, and they're accustomed to blowing people out, you always kind of ask, well, how are you guys measuring one another? And I think when you look at Tebow and that Mystics group, they're measuring one another by how well they do what they do. And so I think last night, after they made a few defensive adjustments and started sending that second person over to Liz, and Emma Mieseman got a couple blocks in on Liz down the stretch in that ball game, you really saw them gel. And then the joy of competition kind of took over.
I really felt there were like 2 points in the game that I would really thought were turning points. About halfway through the second quarter, Vegas went up by 10. Then Tolliver hits a three, cuts it to 7. Mieseman comes into the game, and then Deladon, Cloud, Mieseman scored, cut it to 2, and then Washington's defense just locked them down the last half of the second quarter, and they actually ended up leading by 2 points at the half. So there was that, and then I thought early fourth, you mentioned it a minute ago, Mieseman scored like 8 points in about a minute 15, and then, Vegas kept battling, but I mean, I felt Mieseman really broke their back and broke their, basically that kind of... It didn't break their spirit, but it really kind of put them in a tough spot at that point.
It's so deflating. I mean, I don't know what it is. Like, you expect Elena Deladon, the MVP, to go get buckets. You know Christy Tolliver is a WNBA champion, is a seasoned vet. But something about Emma Mieseman, and we talked with Hannah last week on the pod, she was one of those players that was listed on that most underrated list when you talk to players around the league. And I think she poses a little bit of a matchup problem. And maybe you might even use that term sneaky athletic, although her game is not necessarily predicated on athleticism, but she's a sneaky bucket because she's very efficient at what she does. So I'm super excited for the matchup moving forward. It's crazy that these two teams are back, because I remember Connecticut coming into D.C. and playing at the Sports and Entertainment Arena right after Laisha Clarendon had gone down with the knee injury that ultimately cost her the season, and the Sun got waxed. In hindsight, the Mystics waxed a lot of people, but I just remember thinking, wow, like, this group looks crazy. But having opportunities to talk to some of those players, they never wavered in their confidence in one another. And I think that's why they're here. You see, you got to be real careful what you say about the Sun, Bruce, because it will end up as bulletin board material via their Twitter or their Instagram page, and they will not let it go.
Well, these are the two teams that had the best record regular season in the league. So I think it's kind of the matchup that people who follow the league are really sort of anticipating. And that 43-point blowout at the end of June, I mean, that was one of the worst losses ever in the W as far as margin of victory. But that was also during Connecticut had kind of that midseason lull where they got off to a really good start, then they kind of stumbled. That was during their low point, and they kind of got it together. So it was 2-1, the season series, right? Connecticut won the first two, then there was that one. So who do you like? Who's winning this thing?
It's tough, and I do run the risk of becoming bulletin board material. I love the arc of Jasmine Thomas's career. I think she's an all-star, whether she's voted into that position or not. We had Jonquel Jones on our podcast. Courtney Williams, how can you not get behind the energy that she brings? Natisha Heidemann was one of my favorite covers in the Big East last year, competing with Marquette. Alyssa Thomas and I go back to competing at Georgetown in Maryland, and I can so appreciate what she's been able to do with two torn labrums, because I have a partially torn labrum in college as well, so that I know that's a beast. Kurt Miller's fantastic. I'm going to blame this one on my homerism. No, I'm not. Part of it is homerism. The other part of it is just an analyst. I just think the Mystics are not going to be denied. I mean, I think when you look at the matchups, Tebow has said it. Emma Mieseman was the missing link. If she plays with the efficiency that we saw, particularly in the second quarter, of that game last night, or even what we saw in game 1 and 2, where she put up 27 and 30 respectively, I don't know what Connecticut has for that.
I agree. I mean, I like Connecticut. I live in Connecticut. I'm kind of a homer, although I certainly respect, you know, the Mystics. I think you're right. I think it's Washington probably in five.
Well, I'll take it in five. I definitely think we can go five. But you got the MVP. I mean, it's going to be a great series. And that's the one thing I did really, really enjoy about the Vegas Washington series. There was a part of me that was very much rooting for a game five because I thought it had just been that good. And so I love where we are in terms of the quality of the game. And at this point, it should be high quality. We're at the finals. It's for all the marbles.
That was dope.
The term legend doesn't do Nancy Lieberman justice. She's a New Yorker to the core, born in Brooklyn and grew up in Far Rockaway, Queens. Her journey started on the playgrounds of the city and has taken her all over the world. She won two national championships at Old Dominion, won the Wade Trophy as a Player of the Year twice, was a three-time Kodak All-American, and won Olympic silver in the 1976 Olympics at the age of 18, becoming the youngest hooper in Olympic history to win a medal. Nancy played in the WNBA at age 39, and then she made a comeback at age 50. She's played against men on the Lakers Summer League team and also in the now-defunct USBL. She was a member of the Washington Generals and played against the Harlem Globetrotters. She's been a head coach and GM in the WNBA, an assistant coach in the NBA, and is the head coach of Power, the very first Big Three championship team. Tragically, one of her players from Power, Andre Emmett, was killed on Sunday, several days after we recorded our interview with Nancy. Here was her tribute to Andre, courtesy of WFAA TV in Dallas.
Extraordinary young man. I feel honored to have gotten to know him the way I have the last 2 years. We've probably spent more time on airplanes talking about, you know, family, children, life, his goals, his dreams. I was working out when I got a phone call and they said that Andre Emmett died. And I'm like, no, he didn't. I'm gonna be with him in a few hours. And you know, I called over to the league and I called Catino Mobley and he had not heard yet. I talked to him Friday, and I was going to take him today to get his knee shot. We were supposed to go to China with the Big Three the end of October. And I was joking with him. I go, you're a big baby. You're 6'5". I got to hold your hand at the doctor. But we were friends. And he was just so deep and so caring. And he loved his children. And he loved his mom and his family. He had a love for kids, and he wanted to use his platform to help people. And I admired him. You know, he was a really great role model. I talked to Coach Knight this morning and his wife Karen, and they were heartbroken. You know, we were talking about Bobby, and Andre said, he goes, I didn't know what Coach Knight meant to me when I was playing because he was so hard on me. He goes, but he's helped make me the man that I am today. We should pray for his family because Andre Emmett was a young man who really wanted to be a force away from basketball and change the world. And he wanted to affect the lives of people he didn't even know. He didn't care if they were white or black or Hispanic, Latino, you know, Asian. He just wanted to, you know, he would always call me his mentor. His mom just said that, you know, Andre told her about our phone conversation last week about partnering and doing things charitably. We just lost a really great person.
Andre Emmett was a great person indeed. I can actually remember his days at Texas Tech under Coach Knight. So certainly prayers to all of his family. Thanks again to WFAA TV in Dallas for that clip. Nancy Lieberman is a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and several others. And she is a basketball analyst, having worked for ESPN and Fox Sports. Nancy has been a pioneer in the game of basketball and also with her off-the-court activities. In our wide-ranging discussion with Nancy, she discussed her latest pioneering moment, appearing in the ESPN Body Issue at the tender age of 61. Nancy, I am slightly fangirling. Welcome to Buckets, Boards, and Blocks. Thanks so much for coming on. Just to jump right into this conversation, recently, the news, the body issue, let's just start there. How did that come to be?
Well, it's an absolute honor to have been selected, but I was at NBA Summer League. I was at a board meeting to the NBRPA when I got a phone call a year ago, July, saying that I had been selected. So what I did is I said, look, I will accept this honor, but I need to run it by my son. And he was playing summer league with the Milwaukee Bucks. So that was part of the whole deal here, is I needed to make sure TJ was comfortable with his mother doing this. And he was very supportive, and I agreed to do it. So I guess they didn't have anybody on the female side who was older. They had Serena Williams, might have been around 34. On the men's side, you know, Gary Player was in his 70s. Greg Norman was in his 60s. And Jerry Rice was, I think, 55. But we had never had a woman who was kind of my age. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. Okay, but sis, tell me, did you go on Whole 30 keto? Because the abs, Nancy, you was coming with the abs.
No, I don't diet. You know, I was a little bit more strict with my food portions and, you know, laying, not that I eat a lot of pastas and things like that, but I was a little bit more strict with what I was eating. I wanted to make sure, you know, I had my own goal, and my goal was if you covered our faces, which is the 60-year-old and which is the 25-year-old. And that was something that was very important to me.
Well, as the saying goes, you read the youngsters to filth. I mean, it was so incredible when it hit. It's coming down Twitter, and I just remember seeing it. And of course, every time I hear your name, growing up loving the WNBA, there's always like a smile innately, because I'm like, that's the lady that played with the men. Like, she was ahead of the curve in terms of breaking barriers before we could even kind of pronounce what that was as young girls, because you just made it look like the thing to do. So with that in mind, Nancy, and I've watched a ton of different YouTube videos on you, I've read about you, your love story with basketball. I know you started playing around 9 up in New York.
Yeah, it was. My first sport was football. And about 7, 8 years old, and I played in a tackle football league, and then I started playing baseball, and I was playing PAL baseball until, unfortunately, before our first game, I was told that I could not play because they wouldn't insure me because I was a girl. And that was the first time I had ever felt, I didn't know if the word was discrimination at the time, but it was more disappointment. And I walked into a local, like a YMCA, and I said, can I play here? And they said, yes. And I said, can I play on a boys team? And they said, yes. And that was the beginning of everything for me. And I never looked back. You know, Monica, what I do is normal to me. It's just not normal to the outside world. And for my friends and the young women in the WNBA, which I deeply admire, they don't have to break the glass ceiling. They don't have to be a trailblazer. They don't have to be a pioneer. All they have to do is be ready to play the game at the highest level, respect and attack the game with their greatness. My generation, you know, kind of laid down that yellow brick road, you know, the Ann Meyers, the Blazejowskis, the Wooders, the Millers, myself, so they could have what they have today. And I'm thrilled.
Is nothing short of admirable, beautiful. I mean, you are a Hall of Famer for good reason. But Nancy, in the midst of all of this, I mean, I know at your core you identify yourself as a basketball player, and I totally get that. But was it tiring? Like, how? Like, it was normal to you, but it wasn't normal to the outside world. So how did you sort of navigate the mentally taxing aspect of it? Because I'm sure you weren't always welcomed with open arms, as you just mentioned.
Well, I wasn't always welcomed with open arms, but I also knew that this is what I love to do. And honestly, I never was a kid that got caught up in all those like mind games. I call them mind monsters. They want me. They don't want me. I'm a girl. All I knew is that I was bullied. You know, you're a tomboy. the words hurt me because I needed sports more than sports needed me. And I was a poor kid from a one-parent family, you know, growing up with no father and no food, no electricity sometimes, no heat. And we were one grandparent away from food stamps. So what I was doing was very important to me. It was building my confidence, my self-esteem, my decision-making. And quite frankly, sports made me feel good about me. When they said, we'll pick the girl, that was almost like saying, you love me. And those are things that I was not getting at home. So everybody, as I mentioned, has something in their life. And I'm really grateful that sports filled a void. Because I could have joined the gang. I could have carjacked you. I could have, been stealing and doing things that other kids were doing. But I fell in love with this game. And it is a great love story, by the way. It's never abandoned me. It's never hurt me. It's only loved me, this game of basketball. And I'm trying to give that same love back to the game. And you don't grow up wanting to be a Hall of Famer or an Olympian or a trailblazer or whatever those nice words are. I played basketball because it was fun. I was with friends. It made me feel good. And I hope every kid still does that.
Gosh, you're so incredible. I'm just loving this conversation. As you talk about it, it is very simple. And I, too, subscribe to the idea that as long as you're true to the game will be true to you as well. But now that you've gone into so many directions with the game, Nancy, whether it be coaching at the Big Three, the NBA, WNBA, whatever it is, did you struggle to relate to other athletes at all? Because I find, right, like we talk about these elite achievers, which you are, and then everybody is not as talented or not as driven or even as focused as you. Like, did you struggle in terms of what your demands were upon amongst those that were in your circle?
No, I keep it as simple as possible. I'm just a normal person. I go out, I do my business. At that point in my life, my whole focus was just being a great basketball player. Where I am today, and I'm more of a minimalist. So the first part of my life, I was learning. The middle part of my life, I started to earn. And then at this part, I'm returning. So it's learning, earning, returning. And that's how I've lived my life. And, you know, I was lucky because when I didn't have any supporters or female role models, you know, all my role models were African-American men. You know, Walt Frazier, Willis Reed, Dr. J, and my ultimate hero, Muhammad Ali. Those guys were the focal point of who I wanted to be. And it wasn't really until Ali and I met in 79. We were both the athletes, ironically, making an appearance at the New York Stock Exchange for the Olympic Committee. It was a fundraiser. And Old Dominion had just won their first national championship and I was player of the year. But Ali was my man. And I couldn't breathe when I was in the room with him. It was crazy. I mean, my mom goes up to him and starts hugging him. Mr. Muhammad, you know, with her New York accent, my daughter is the greatest of all time. And he's like, look, lady, there's only one greatest of all time, and it's me. And she's like, no, I know you're good, but my daughter, she is the greatest. And he calls me over and he goes, your mom says you're the greatest. And I'm like, or he says, you know, your mom says you're really good. And I go, no, you know, and I was really, I couldn't even look at him because I was like shaking. And I go, no, Mr. Muhammad, you know, I'm not out. And I'm bumbling and stumbling. I go, I'm the greatest of all times. And he looks at me and hugs me and he goes, there's two of us? And I'm like, yeah, there's two of us. And I hit people too. And he goes, I'm going to ask you not to hit people. And what I said to him was, you hit people. He goes, I get paid to hit people. He goes, Nancy, you can't beat up everybody that hurts your feelings. I said, but they make me feel bad, Mr. Muhammad. They make fun of me and they tell me I'm stupid and dumb and I'm never going to make anything of myself. He goes, God made you special. He goes, there's something about you that's different. And I said, how do you know that? You know God too? Muhammad Ali knows God? I was so stupid.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
I got a little Jewish mother too, just like you got a little Jewish mother. And they always think that their baby is the greatest of all time. But, you know, so I guess we have that in common, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But he was funny because, you know, he was great. I mean, he looked at me and he knew I was like a broken, fraudulent little kid. Not that I was little. But he knew, and we sat there that one day, and he says to me, there'll never be a day that I'm not in your life. And I was like, but you're Muhammad Ali. And he goes, that's right, I am. And we are going to be friends for life. And true to his word, to the day we buried him 3 years ago, June, he was every major thing in my life. I could at least run it by him, whether it's playing in, you know, playing for the Lakers in 80, in the summer league and Pat Riley being my coach, or, you know, going and playing in the WNBA at 39 or 50. And the joke used to be with me, later on in life, I'd come over to the house in Phoenix and I'd sit there and I'm like, Muhammad, you know, I've come out of retirement more than you. And Lonnie Ali would sit there and go, he's been waiting all day for you. And that's what you tell him. And, you know, he'd give me that, you know, biting his lip and kind of balling up his hands. And I'm really fortunate. I know when I walk out of my house, clearly, you know, who I am, what I am, and what I represent. But that's not always how I feel. I feel very humbled and very honored to be in the position that I am in, because I get to influence people's lives. I get to help people be introspective, make them laugh, make them cry, and just make them come tomorrow better than they were today. And it's an honor.
I got one more mom question, and then I'll get out of Monica's way for a little bit. So you were saying when you were talking to Ali that you hit people. And I think you told me a story one time about when you would go up to Harlem to play ball on the playground and your mom was worried about you. And she said, Nancy, you know, be careful, whatever, or you know, I'm worried about you. And you told her, don't worry, Mom, I won't hurt any of those guys. That's really kind of your spirit, isn't it?
Obviously I was either stupid or oblivious to, you know, my surrounding areas. But I would, you know, I would take T-shirts, I'd put it in my jacket when I rode the train, the A train, you know, from Far Rockaway to Rucker Park. I would switch the trains in the city, and then I'd get off at 155th and walk into the park. But I had a jacket, and guys would look at me like, little girl, you know, little redheaded Jewish kid, skinny girl, are you lost? I said, no, are you? And it was do it to them before they did it to me. And they're like, you know where you are? I said, yeah, Rucker Park. And then the guy who was talking to me, I said, is your name Rucker? He goes, no. I said, good, it ain't your park. And I want to play, and I heard you were good, and I want to be really good, and I need you to help me be good. It was really, you know, pretty unbelievable how I was treated. Those guys would ride the train home with me, Ronald, Donald, and Gary. And they just make sure I got home safe. And it wasn't the day of, you know, like, hey, I'm texting you, I'm going to be there at 5:10. You had to pick the train, the time. I would have to call on my landline to their landline. I mean, we had to do it the old fashioned way, communication. So that was really important. And they really cared about me. And I appreciate, you know, how much they were willing to help me. You know, everybody needs support, and the guys, you know, the African-American guys in Harlem, they celebrated me. They didn't tolerate me. And that was very important. Where, you know, honestly, some white people were telling me, you know, they were so negative to me and telling me what I couldn't be. You can't do this. You can't do that. You know, you're a little girl. Girls don't do this. And I was telling them, don't stereotype me. Don't, you know, you should be telling me what I can be instead of telling me what I can't be. And I became just so hard-headed in my spirit. And it was like, I would just close in on me to protect me. I didn't want the outside world, you know, influencing me in a negative way.
Wow. Gosh, geez, man, you're just great. I mean, I know you get people that tell you this, but I'm just loving this conversation. Okay, so you're doing your thing at Rucker Park. You're developing, is callous the right word, Nancy, in terms of an ability to protect yourself from all of the naysayers?
Not for me. The word is deaf. You have to be deaf because you can't allow the outside noise to influence you. Or the negativity. And really, when people are negative towards you, it's because they live in a world of mediocrity and they don't know any better. They don't know anything about achievement. They go, they go to work miserable. They wake up miserable. They're miserable with their family or their wife or whoever. And it's how they live. And I don't live like that. I wake up happy. I wake up thinking how I can inspire somebody. That's exactly how my life is. I thank God in the morning for the ability to have another day. And there's somebody out there that is going through something that maybe I can help them. I can't solve all the world's problems. And I just do the best I can. But, you know, I'm an athlete from the 80s. And you guys, tell me how many athletes from the 80s are relevant in 2019. Martina, McEnroe, Barkley, Jordan, who? And I'm proud I'm one of them.
Yeah, no, for fact. I totally got you. And you should be very proud of that. Okay, so in the midst of all of these early on things that were sort of uncommon, you still were very successful as a women's basketball player on the high school level. You play on the 1975 Olympic team as the youngest Olympian to do it yet. How does that even work? Did they come chase you down from high school or did somebody see you in the park? How did that come about?
Well, it's a good question. I was, you know, like obviously I had been playing up in Harlem and playing, you know, in the parks in New York. And when I got to Far Rockaway High School, I was, you know, playing on the varsity. And one of my coaches called, at the time, it was called Olympic House, and there was one in New York. And later on, they told me it was the first athlete that they received a phone call on that ever truly made the Olympic team. So I think my gym teacher called over to the Olympic House and said, we got this, you know, young girl who is, you know, really good. And they're like, lady, do you know how many phone calls we get? And so they, I don't know if that went anywhere, but in 1974, there was a tryout. It was almost like America's Got Talent. There was four areas around the country. USA Basketball, it was called ABA USA. So there was a tryout in Queens College and three other markets. So I saw a little ad in the Long Island Press, and it said tryout US playing three games against Russia. So I just went with like five of my teammates, and it was like getting a number to run a marathon. They pinned a number on you. It was free. And there were 250 girls at Queens College in New York. And it started at like 8 in the morning and ended at 6 at night. And every couple hours they'd make cuts. And you would, you know, run and look at the number on the wall and hope your number was still alive. And I kept doing this. Now, I was only, you know, 14 and a half, 15 years old when I went to this tryout. And at the end of the day, they picked 20 players for the last scrimmage, 10 on each team. I was on that. And then they selected 10 to go to this USA pre-camp in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So this is where the story changes my life and maybe changes a little bit of the history of women's basketball. I go home that night. And I'm like, Mom, you're not going to believe this. I just made this tryout for this U.S. team, and I'm going to Albuquerque. And she goes, honey, I can't put food on the table. How am I going to fly you to Albuquerque? I'm like, Mom, I have to go. I mean, the U.S. team needs me. And she's like, uh-huh. So my high school principal, my assistant principal, Barbara Sakowicz, she took a can of corn, opened it, cleaned it, ripped the label off, typed on an envelope, we're endeavoring to raise $300 to send Nancy to the Olympic tryouts, and taped it to the can. That can went door to door in Bayswater in Far Rockaway, and they raised money for me and my high school coach, Larry Morris, to go to Albuquerque. So there were 40 of us, 10 from each of these regions. At the end of 3 days, I was one of the 10 of the 40 picked to go to the to be with the USA team, the national team. And here I am playing against Pat Summitt and Ann Myers. And, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old, and they're proven proven stars. So I went, and I went through, and I had my ribs broken on the second day. So I'm getting ready to go home, and the coach is in the car, Alberta Cox, and they're driving me to the airport. And she turns around because I'm in the back seat, and she goes, "Now, honey, now you work on your game. We're going to need you in 1980. I'm sitting in the back seat, and I looked at her, and I said, "You know, coach, like, I'm not real smart or nothing because, like, I'm from New York, but I know that 76 comes before 80, and I'm going to be on the 76 team, so you're going to have to get used to me." And she just looked at me like, "How dare you say that?" Okay, so I'm always on the other side of fear. I'm not afraid. I respect everybody and I fear nobody, but I'm always living on the other side of fear. I'm not going to let that rule my life. And I went home and worked my ass off and made the 75 Pan Am team. We won the gold medal, and then made the 76 team as a senior in high school when we won, you know, the silver medal. It's crazy, but that's kind of who I am, and that's who I am today on this interview. I am not afraid to coach men. I'm not afraid to try to win. I'm not afraid to be in the NBA. It's an honor and a privilege what has happened to me in my career, and I don't take it for granted. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm exactly who I'm supposed to be, and those are the words of Muhammad Ali.
Literally, I wish we were sort of video conferencing. I'm like smiling, my eyes, my face, I'm so expressive along with the story, but I just love how secure, and granted, Nancy, like at 60 plus, you've lived a whole life, you've accomplished a ton, but each story you tell, I don't know if you call it fortuitous bounces, I don't know if you would call it faith, divine destination, I'm not sure, but it seems like there were always people in your corner that sincerely supported you. Where do you think that has come from?
Anybody who's been great at anything has not done it by themselves. Yeah. And I've had amazing people. And I say this, you know, when people are complaining, women are complaining, well, you know, men are holding us back. I will take the other side and say, that's not true. We are holding us back. You think we I just gave a speech the other day, the keynote at the Sports Business Journal's, their national conference in New York. And, you know, one of the things was women in leadership and adversity. And I'm like, adversity is us. We're the obstacles in many cases. We can't keep pointing the finger. And, I mean, to have Ali there, Dr. Buss allowed me, talk about being ahead of your time, when he called me with Jerry West in 1980 to play for the Lakers in their summer league for Pat Riley. I mean, I was Pat's first point guard, not Magic. It's crazy to be able to play in the WNBA, to play 2 years in a men's league. I was hired, you know, by Andy Ekman. When I went to ESPN, you know, I was hired by Norby. One of my bosses was Bruce Bernstein. Every step of my career, I have been given extraordinary opportunity by men. Donnie Nelson hiring me to be a head coach in the D League, now the G League. Vivek Ramadev and Vlade Divac bringing me over to the Sacramento Kings. And now Ice Cube, you know, hires me to be a head coach in the Big Three. It's really important to have those people in your corner and those opportunities.
All right.
I remember after we won the championship with Power a year ago, it was, you know, a couple weeks later when Ice Cube texted me and he goes, "NL, are you ever afraid?" And I said, "No, sir." I said, "The only time I'm ever afraid is when people don't give me an opportunity." Because I wanted him to be so proud of me. I wanted Donnie Nelson to be so proud of me. I wanted Vivek and Vlade to be so proud of me. quite frankly, I wanted Bruce Bernstein and Norby, you know, to be proud of me and the work that I do. I never take things for granted.
So, proud of you, Nancy. Come on. Come on.
Bruce is coming back tears, Nancy. He's so touched. Okay, but look, let's get into this a little bit further, Nancy. Let's go all the way there because I have been fortunate, obviously, I know you, but I've been fortunate to have lots of guys be allies for myself as well. But then we go to various conferences, to your point, and it seems to be rah, 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 women versus men. If you were giving a woman in a space, maybe that is still male dominated, advice, what would it be? Because it sounds like you walk into a room and sort of garner respect. And obviously, again, I'm not you, but I hear some horror stories in a way from some of my colleagues, which are things that I've just not had to deal with. And I don't know if it's because of height or the way you carry yourself or whatever. So how would you advise other young women or women, period, in spaces that are not necessarily diverse?
Well, I think the first thing is, and I got this sage advice from David Stern before I was hired a couple years before that. I was getting ready to go, and I'm going to answer your question, but I was getting ready to go to the Hall of Fame enshrinement in September. And I was talking to Dave, and I felt like I was ready maybe for an opportunity in the NBA, and I wanted his advice. And he goes, Nancy, you need to go to LA. You need to go to the NBA coaches symposium because everybody in the league is going to be there. You must be around the people that are going to hire you. So the Hall of Fame is who you were, and the people in the NBA is where you want to go. So I will say this to any woman, you have to be around the men that are going to hire you or the people who are going to hire you. You must, you know, let them see you're good, you're competent, you're sharp, you have great interpersonal skills with others. And it was really brilliant advice because you never know who your next boss is going to be. And it's your job to make it normal. So if you're a woman and you want to get into business or you want to be a CEO, or you have to be around the people and that are going to hire you, vote for you, appoint you, and you have to make it normal. And when I got the job with Donnie Nelson in 2010, in 2011, President Obama asked me to come to the White House. So I go to the White House, I bring my son, and he comes over. He was clearly excited, you know, to be around somebody not politically charged. And, you know, he loves hoops. And he looks at TJ and he goes, son, can you beat your mom? And he goes, nope. He goes, well, can I beat your mom? And he goes, nope. President Obama goes, okay, yeah, tough room. And he goes, Nancy, I've been a black man my whole life. It's normal to me. I just happen to be the president of the United States. You've been a white woman your entire life. You've been, you know, coaching and playing against men and now predominantly, you know, black men. It's normal to you. And I said, yes, sir, it is normal. He goes, our job is to make it normal to the world at large. It's not normal to them. And I always take that to heart because I know that it's not normal, but that's what you're doing. That's what I'm doing. That's what Becky's doing. It's all these great female athletes, you know, Serena, the U.S. soccer team. We're making being a champion, we're making competition normal to the outside world, where the fathers and grandfathers and this next generation are going to be the greatest champions we women have.
I love that. I love that. And I think in order to do that, obviously, as you've demonstrated, there is an innate confidence that just has to kind of come from within. And I love the way you pinned being deaf as a power as opposed to an inadequacy, because you really got to lock in with those that buy into who you are and what you bring to the table.
You have to be the voice, not the echo. And I like I said before, I respect everybody, but I fear nobody, because again, maybe it's that minimalist attitude of mine. I could either get hired or not get hired. ESPN could want me to work for them or not want me to work for them. And I don't get all these mind monsters in my head. you know, so many times in life, women, we're always stepping on landmines. Oh my God, boom, I'm not a good mom. Boom, I want to work. Boom, dinner wasn't on the table at the right time. Boom, so-and-so's mad at me. We got to stop stepping on landmines and detonating them ourselves. We just have to be confident in what we do. That means you have to do your work. You can't be just as good. You have to be better than. You just have to fit in with people. You don't get jobs anymore on resumes. You get jobs on relationships. And just be a good person, you know, lift when you rise, help other people around you be successful. And then all of a sudden, how you used to think, because I was going to be the greatest of all times. I was dead set. This is what I was going to do. I was going to be just like my man. And then, you know, he taught me about racism, and he taught me about philanthropy, and he taught me about there's two people in life. There's givers and takers. If you're always catching, you're a taker. If you're throwing something back, you're a giver. What are you doing for other people around you? And, you know, to be an influencer, I have to give you a reason to follow me. Not because I make more money or I'm more famous or I have a better title. Because you see something special in me that you want to emulate. And I just don't see, and look, I've made my fair share of mistakes. You know, I'm sure I've been a pain in the ass. If women are a little, you know, alpha, you know, sometimes they could get, you know, get called, you know, things that I don't really want to say, where sometimes men are a shining star or they're a silver bullet, or my gosh, look how tough and aggressive and he's going to be a star. And if we do it, you know, sometimes like, man, she's a bitch. She's a pain in the ass. No, we just want success. We just want opportunity, but we also have to find a balance of how to get to it and then have long-term sustainability. You don't want to be a one-hit wonder. And I want to have intentional greatness. Every day I wake up, I don't want to be a Dow Joneser. I don't want to be up, I'm down, I'm up, I'm down. I don't want to be on that roller coaster of life. I want to be consistently consistent. I want to help change people's lives. I want to be great at what I do. And I want every coach in the big three to have to work a little bit harder because I set the standards a little bit higher.
I love that. Nancy. Greatness. Go, Bruce, go.
Nancy, so you talk about, you know, the relationships and how important they are. So you've coached women and you've coached guys. Is there any difference in between coaching men and women?
The normal answer is no, Bruce, you know, women and guys are just the same. And that's not the truth. There is a difference. In the locker room, there's a difference. There's hormones. There's personality differences. And it's okay. You know, I'm not going to treat everybody the same, but I am going to treat them with respect. I'm going to be firm, but I'm going to be fair because my job is to push you to places you want to be that you haven't been before. So I just think that, you know, when people look at guys, and I'm a huge supporter, protector of the male athlete because they're so close to me. You know, when Deion Sanders was going to go back and play with the Ravens, I mean, I got the phone call in the middle of the night, sis, can you come to the house? Because, you know, he needed me to talk to, as his wife at the time, Pilar, about what support system he was going to need. You know, Larry Fitzgerald is a dear friend of mine. You know, I mean, Kobe, when I came back and played at 50, Kobe wanted to know. He wanted to dissect my thought process of why I would come back and risk my reputation. So I get a lot of athletes who come to me, male athletes. I think it's really important to know that behind these big, strong, uber-rich athletes in all sports, male, they're little boys, and they want to be loved, they want to be cared for, they want to be protected, they want rules, they want to be able to have, you know, their own autonomy and make their own decisions. But at the end of the day, you have to pour love and kindness, and respect is a two-way street. And that's what I try to do. With women, it was a little bit different because the WNBA was so new and they're so receptive to information, and they didn't have 15 years under their belt, and they weren't making, you know, millions and millions of dollars. So it was a little bit different. There was a little bit of a willingness and kind of openness to learn what you were willing to teach them. So it's different people, different journeys, but you're trying to get to the same destination. And it's, you just have to be cognizant of how to talk to people and how to care for people. It's like having, you know, three or four kids. You're not going to treat all those children the same way. But at the end of the day, you must lead with love, because there's a reason, like DeMarcus Cousins comes to a Big Three game, or Rondo and I talk, or Bellinelli or Omri Caspi, or the guys, you know, Steph Curry calls me and says, can you come to my camp? I want you to talk to my kids. There's a reason. I still get goosebumps, you know, when people like that, you know, come and talk to me, or, you know, respect that I get from, you know, so many people, both men and women.
What is your take on the overall state of basketball as far as this country is concerned? The NBA is, I mean, I feel like it's getting some of the most attention that it's ever gotten in terms of its international acclaim. Obviously, I wasn't around back in the day, but that's the way it seems to me. The WNBA is growing in audience. It seems to be exponentially. There are still some issues at hand in terms of the way the leagues support one another. But just in general, what do you see in terms of the growth of just American basketball across the board?
Well, the biggest difference is the men are, you know, 50 years ahead of the WNBA. But if you look at it, you know, apples to apples, when the NBA started, they were playing in the Armory. They were playing in front of 2,000-3,000 people. I remember, I think it was in the early 60s, maybe 67, 68, when Phil Jackson signed a guaranteed contract with the Knicks for 12,000 and 13,000. When the WNBA started back in the day, it was pretty spectacular. We were playing in major arenas. We were on ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports. We had enormous support from the NBA. So if you look at our starting point, we were so far ahead of where the men were as far as salaries. You know, our salaries were $40,000 and $50,000 for the top players, you know, as opposed to where the men were starting, you know, way back when the NBA started. So I think we have to keep things in perspective. The WNBA is continuing to grow, you know, putting more seats, you know, people in the seats, getting more sponsorship as far as, you know, building relationships with major companies. Certainly the ratings are going up. They just signed a contract with CBS to give them more national exposure. We're still in the baby, in year 23, we're still in the baby stages of who we are, but we are ahead of where the men are. Now, if you're going to compare, and I did see, I think Asia Wilson or somebody said, you know, why can't we make, you know, similar to what the men make? At this point, their widgets sell better than our widgets. And they get 50%, I believe, of revenues, and the WNBA gets somewhere in the neighborhood of 20%. But it's 20% of what is the league bringing in. So we're just at two different stages of our business plan, but things have to change. I do think it's going to happen in collective bargaining. I am on a, you know, on some boards and committees in regard to that, you know, with the players and the Players Association. I think you're going to see a very favorable deal. Adam Silver, he's very much a proponent, like David Stern was, for women's sports. He wants this to continue to grow. He'd give anything for it to grow. So we have to figure out, you know, a collective way of, okay, we're moving the sticks, but we are, you know, have to be mindful of what's coming in and what's going out. So we'll see. You know, I selfishly think there should be health insurance for former WNBA players who are now 23 years later. Now that the NBA is the first league in history to have health insurance for all alumni, you know, former players. I think that through the NBRPA, the RPA, and the league, that is a unbelievable distinction. And you have great people. Man, you got great people. Adam Silver is the greatest commissioner in sports. and he cares, and he wants women to grow. I mean, he's the guy that got up there months ago and said, I want a female head coach in the NBA sooner than later. That's your boss saying that. So I think this is, we're on the right track, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of we're going to have a conversation, because I think when you say we're going to have a conversation, you haven't said anything. I would like to see an action. I would like to see an action to the next level of what, you know, WNBA players get in their contract. Instead of let's talk about it some more. I think that's, you know, that's just a bunch of nonsense. We have to have more discussion. Discussion means you haven't done anything. And it's just, it's like a stall tactic.
I mean, I think we've seen some progress recently, right? With the WNBA teams that are kind of the final four in the playoffs getting charter flights. I mean, how important of a sign is that to you?
It's huge. It is absolutely huge. And we can't just kind of poo-poo it. Something like that is so important in taking care of your players or sending your player home to get treatment, because you're going to need her, you know, somewhere down the road in a pivotal game. It's going to happen. And I have to tell you, for all the amazing young women that are in the WNBA today, on some level, you're just like me. You're a pioneer, and you're getting an amazing opportunity right now, but you're setting the plate for somebody two decades ahead of you who's going to make $500,000 a year, who's going to be on chartered flights, who's going to have health insurance for the rest of her life. That's what being a pioneer is. You either embrace it or it sucks. And you have to embrace it. It's just where we were born. And it's okay. You know, I mean, I was with Barkley at the Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago, and I think the most he ever made was like $3 million. That was the highest he ever made in his playing days. And these guys are making $20, $25 million, you know, a season. I mean, Charles Barkley isn't mad. It's just it's the way it is. It's how it's happened in life. And he and Michael, they set the plate for the Zions and the RJ Barretts. You know, it's just the way it is. And we're pioneers. Look, I mean, Bruce Bernstein, look where ESPN started back in 1979. Somebody had to make some sacrifices for where it is today.
That's true. And that's what we're trying to do here with Pure Hoops Media, shameless plug, as we try and build our little franchise from the ground up. You've been so generous with your time. I did want to ask you about your son, TJ. You've always been a male athlete, and he's certainly got to be one of your favorite male athletes. I know he played ball at Richmond. Is he playing pro ball somewhere overseas right now?
Yes. Thank you for talking about my son, because I'm most proud of what he's done. You know, he was least likely to ever make anything of himself. He was this, like, you know, white, doughy, you know, privileged, just kidding on the privilege, but, you know, kid playing in high school. And then his junior year, the light went on and he decided this is what he really wants to do. So the first thing is he took care of his body and everything else followed. You know, he finally gets a scholarship to college. He goes to Niagara. They do a great job. They win the MAC. Coach Mihalik goes to Hofstra, and then TJ transfers to Richmond, and everything changed exponentially right then. He busted his behind. You know, 3 years later, he was the A-10 player of the year. Had an amazing career at Richmond, and I'm so proud of him. He's played the last 2 years summer league with the Milwaukee Bucks, and he's in Tel Aviv. He plays for Holon. 3 years ago, they won the Israeli Cup for the first time in like 100 years. And that's something that's usually reserved for Maccabi, Tel Aviv, or Jerusalem, the very, very high budget teams. But he's back there for his third year, and I'm just so proud of him. And he played on the Israeli national team last year for the first time in the World Cup qualifiers. So every experience for him is helping to develop, you know, the man he is, and he just loves the game and he works so hard at it. And I'm a proud mother, to be quite honest. Whatever we do in our career, when your kid does something really spectacular, that's all that matters. And, you know, I love him. I'm proud of him. And, you know, I want to be PJ's hero. I don't really care about anybody else.
I bet that you have definitely achieved and exceeded that for him. It's funny because I was actually covering the A-10. I covered the A-10 for about 3 years, but I remember when TJ picked up Player of the Year award, and that squad, Chris Mooney and those guys, I can't remember the point guard that he played with. I can see his face, but
Chandre Jones. They played in the TBT this year together.
I was just about to say that I saw them in Chicago this summer. I was out taking in some TBT action. Nancy, you've been nothing short of incredible, and you've already accomplished so much. And I know that your motto, what was it? It was learn, earn, and return. Was that what you said?
Yeah, learning, earning, returning.
Okay, there we go. But moving forward, I mean, you're so young, vibrant, a wealth of wisdom. Do you have any goals moving forward?
I just kind of let God put what's out in front of me right now and make sure that I'm prepared for those opportunities. I love coaching. I just love taking people and getting them to, you know, their ultimate destination, getting them that, you know, the contract that they want. You know, if you can have 3 or 4 contracts in your career, you've hit the Willy Wonka golden ticket, and you can give your family generational wealth. That's really important to me to help people succeed. And I think lastly, you know, my charity, we are a children's charity and we're changing kids' lives, and we affect over 4 million children a year with our Dream Court program. We build Dream Courts in cities around the country. We've built 84 so far. We're seeing that kids that are playing and starting to be involved in sports are getting, you know, staying out of the mental health space. They're less likely to be involved with gang activity. They're showing up at school, and they're feeling more confident about themselves. We've sent 55 high school seniors to college since 2012, and we now have 2 graduating classes. In February, we'll send another 10 to college. And we're just trying to do our fair share to help the next generation. And it's part of who I am, and it just makes me happy. You kind of have to know the power you don't know you have, mm-hmm. and you have the power to influence other people's lives. And all I can say about sports, if the rest of the world were like us, there'd be no problem with anger and hate, because I've never come down the court and looked at a white person or a black person and went, yeah, I'm going to go to the white person. No, that's nonsense. When you're in sports, there's this love, there's this camaraderie, there's fellowship, there's competitiveness, there's swag and ego and determination. And, you know, there's all sorts of people in my locker room. And who gives a rat's behind if I look different? Who cares? As long as we can be there and help each other. And that's really important to me also, especially in this crazy time in our country where so many people are angry. They get up, they don't even know why they're angry. And they're angry because they read in the newspaper they should be angry. And it's like, stop it, man. Stop being influenced by people who just want to fight. Let's get along. Let's help each other. Let's be prosperous. Let's pick people up and show them another avenue in life.
I love that.
That's what my goals are. That's what my goals are.
Listen, and I have no doubt that you, of anybody we've interviewed on our podcast, or any athlete that's still relevant from the 80s, as you pointed out, you are definitely the woman who can continue to accomplish those goals and make headway as you already have done. Nancy, thank you so much for your time today. This was absolutely incredible.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and maybe it'll be the first of many.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
I cannot thank Nancy Lieberman enough for being so generous with her time. Those of us who play the game owe her so much. She's absolutely a pioneer, a role model, a legend, all of those fantastic things. I personally am adopting learn, earn, and return for sure. Thanks to my loyal sidekick and producer extraordinaire, as well as Nancy's good pal, Bruce Bernstein. I'm so jealous that they're friends. Of course, we thank our editor, Ben Wolfen, who is also extraordinary, for all of his creative contributions. Please make sure that you check out all of our Pure Hoops Media shows. Mike Wise's guest this week is another Hall of Famer, Dave Cowens. Catch and Shoot has one of its best of shows, and the Pure Hoops podcast with BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman has a new episode every Friday. Please rate, review all of our shows, and make sure you tell a friend. Next week, we'll be into the WNBA Finals, so we'll have lots of discussion and analysis. Until then, my people, enjoy your hoops.
Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt has been a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.